This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, let us try and get busy with the next sugya, which starts on the Daled Amud Beis. The Mishnah listed four obvious nezikim. And it's become clear as we've gone through the sugya already that those are by no means the only four. And we've already seen that the Mishnah itself is to others. So that's by no means the only four. Why then does the Mishnah list those four? That's the first thing that we've got to give consideration to. So there are really one of two possibilities. Either we're going to say the Mishnah lists those four because the Mishnah is only talking about a certain type of nezek. For example, nizke mom, and it's not talking about nizke odom, if we're going to learn like Shmuel. It's only talking about, we've seen this tendency already in the sugya to limit that which the Mishnah is dealing with. It's only talking about those which are mu'ad mitchiloson. It's not talking about something which is tam to start with and mu'ad later on. In other words, the one approach is to say that the Mishnah has limited itself to certain types of ovis, or to a certain area of ovis. The other approach is to say no, the Mishnah is dealing with all ovis nezikin, and included in these four is everything else. That these four are the heads of categories of all the others. And those are two possible ways, because these four aren't all of them. There are many, many others. Yet the Mishnah finds something specific about these four. And that's really the subject of the next sugya, in expanding our vision of the Ovis Nezikin, to see how many there really are, and what their common denominators are. The next sugya is based on an analysis of two brises. The one is the brise of Rabbi Yeshaya, and the one is the brise of Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Yeshaya lists 13 Ovis Nezikin, and Rabbi Chiya lists 24 Ovis Nezikin. Both of them include the Mishnah's Ovis, but go further than that. Says the Gemara, Tani Rabbi Yeshaya. Unfortunately, going to have to finish a bit early today, so let's try and move it. Tani Rabbi Yeshaya, Shloisha Osor Ovis Nezikin. There are 13 Ovis Nezikin. So it's not really right to translate that anymore, there are 13 Ovis Nezikin, just as it's not right to translate the Mishnah as there are 4 Ovis Nezikin. That's an inaccurate translation. The correct translation is Arbo Ovis Nezikin. 4 Ovis Nezikin, colon. That's the translation. 4 Ovis Nezikin are. But 4 Ovis Nezikin are, yeah. And now also, just bear in mind that first Tosfos on the Masechta comes into focus a little bit. The absence of the word hein. Arba Ovis Nezikin hein would seem to imply that there are only 4. The Mishnah doesn't say so. The Mishnah says Arba Ovis Nezikin, but Tosfos says that absence of hein is lav dafke. You can't be medayik anything from the absence of hein. Which is also interesting. Why doesn't Tosfos simply say the absence of hein is because these aren't the only 4, there are many others? Tosfos doesn't suggest that anywhere, does it? Biligan Tosfos says what?
He's saying the natural that chat is with Abba, that the Abba, Abba, and Zikin, how the low is that you say, how the least 4, the one is not like the other. In other words, the hein doesn't come into play at all. Like we're saying now.
So the Gilon is more like we're saying, that the absence of hein is dafka.
Yeah.
So that becomes the difference between, so we see in the Rishonim already, and that's very important, so we see in the Rishonim already that there are two ways of learning. The first one, the first day, and Tosfos holds that the absence of hein is lav dafke. And it could just as well have said hein. And what examples does Tosfos bring there? Shloshes re'ovis nezikin of arba mechusre kapore. Arba shomrim hein, but that's only arba. V'arba rosh hashonim hein, that's only arba. Here it's not Dafka Arba. So why doesn't Tosfos just answer that way? If you look, just look at that first Tosfos. Arba Ovis Nezikin is Duch the Deloy Tani Hen. Sometimes the Mishnah doesn't say there are four Hen specifically. Kemoy Hochel, like here. Uvig Mora Gabi Shloshis Ovis Nezikin, and further on with the Shloshis Ovis Nezikin. And what about the 24? Also doesn't say Hen, does it? But Tosfos doesn't mention that one. Why doesn't Tosfos mention that one? And why doesn't he mention the 24? Is it possible that Tosfos has a gilsa with the 24 that with him? Which would also make good sense, because the 24 is an exhausted list, isn't it? Not really, there's still others. And sometimes Hain is written. In other words, love dafki. You can't. There is nothing to be deduced by the absence of the word hen. But the examples Tosfos gives looks dafka. Arba Rosh Hashanim hen. There are only four. That's when it says hen. Arba Shemim hen. There are only four. That's when it says hen. Arba Mechusre Kapora. I don't know if there are more. But the Giloyan says, no, really, if it said Hain, it would mean these only. The reason it doesn't say Hain, because it's not these only, because there are others. And the Mishnah is dealing only with a specific four. And the Giloyan has its reason as to what the specific nature of the four is. There might be other reasons as to why these four are mentioned. But we already see a divergence of the Rishonim as to understanding why the Mishnah picks these four. What does Rashi say? Why does the Mishnah pick these four? Those are written in the Pasuk Behedya. Those are clearly written in the Pasuk. Does that mean that the Mishnah, that there are no others written in the Pasuk apart from these? Yes, so it could mean. Yeah, but there could be others. There could be others which are also written Behedya. But for some reason, our Tana has picked these four, but all these four are written Bikro Behedya. That's what's unique about our Tana. That all these four written Bikro Behedya. The Gemara Mefarish Hei Niu Tildes, Rashi says. What does he mean by that? And the Gemara explains Hei Niu Tildes. Why does Rashi have to tell us that to us in the beginning already? Is the Kasha? Would we have the Kasha otherwise? What is Rashi? What is the parable? Gemara Mefarish, hey, you told this. So Rashi's telling us another common denominator. They all have told us. These of us all have told us. They're all written Bikro Behedya, and they all have told us. Yeah, except that we see in our sugya is not so. Yeah, but why would Rashi tell us that in the Mishnah already? Then, if it's not clear in the Gemara, that the Gemara there's a tumult about whether that is so or not, then Rashi should leave it open. It makes no difference to us. It seems to be that Rashi is saying that the Mishnah is a hechrich to say that they are told us. The only question is which are the told us. There's no shaila that they are told us in the Mishnah. Whereas in the Brisa, there is a shaila whether they're told us or not, which is interesting. So if it's written Bikro Behedya, then Rashi seems to say they must be told us. If it's not written Bikro Behedya, they don't need to be told us. I don't know why. Look at that Rashi. Others carry Lanech the Ksivin Bikro Behedya. Ubigmor Mefarish, Heini, you told us. And since these others are all written in the Pasuk Behedya, we need to know, it appears from Rashi, which are the told us. But that we see, that there are four listed in the Mishnah. They're either four of a much bigger category, and we're only interested in these four for some particular reason, or they are four heads of categories. We could say in that first Rashi that Rashi is trying to say these four are not heads of categories. If they were heads of categories, then there wouldn't be a necessary assumption that they all have toldos. They could all have ovis. If they're heads of categories and they generate more ovis, in other words, if each one is an av of these four include all the different kinds of ovis. The Meiri says that. The Meiri says that these four include all the others. If that's the case, then they don't necessarily have tildes, because they produce ovis, they produce other ovis. Do you understand what I'm saying? Rashi says, "Vigmorim v'fosh heini you tildes." These are the ovis, so that means the next layer are all tildes. The only question is which are the tildes. These must all have tildes. They're like any other av. So why are they specifically mentioned? Because they're written b'kro behedya. That seems to be what Rashi is saying. Tani Rabbi Yoshaya Shloishos or Ovis Nezikin. There are 13 Ovis Nezikin. What are they? Firstly, they are the four Shomim. Shom Echinam Vashom Nisisocha Vasoche. There are four cases where a person can be entrusted with the property of somebody else legitimately. If you have an object in your possession, either that object belongs to you, or you are a shomer, or you are a ganav. Those are the only three possibilities. If there's an object, anything which is in your possession is either yours, or it's entrusted to you, or it's stolen by you. So there are four different cases by means of which it could be entrusted to you with varying degrees of responsibility. Shomer chinam is when you're looking after it for nothing. I simply ask you to look after my object. You don't use it. You're doing me a favor. That's a shomer chinam. Vahashoel, that's where I'm doing you the favor. You ask whether you can have it and use it. Shoel is the borrower. Noisei Sochor is a person I pay to look after it. And the Socher is a person who pays me to have it. So they're really parallel. The Shomer Chinam's partner is the Noisei Sochor. The Shomer Chinam's looking after it and gets no pleasure out of it himself, but he doesn't get paid, whereas the Noisei Sochor gets paid. The Shoel may use it, but he doesn't pay for that right to use it. The Socher may use it and he pays for the right to use it. Those are the ones. That's four. Nezek tzar v'ripui, sheves v'oishes. The five damages which have to be paid in the event of inflicting a wound on another person. Nezek is the damage, tzar is the pain, ripui is the medical expenses, sheves is the unemployment, and v'oishes is the humiliation. V'arbo the maslisin plus the four of the Mishnah hot place, so that's 13 altogether. That's how Rabbi Oshaya works it out. Says Rashi, Ovis kari lahanach diksivin bikro. He too calls Ovis those which are written in the Pasuk. Are all these written in the Pasuk? They are. But here Rashi doesn't say behedya, implying that the Shoimrim and Nizke Odom, that's Nezek, Tzar, Ripu, Sheves, and Boishes, are not explicit in the Pasuk. They have to be worked out a little bit from the post-psukim. It's not stated quite clearly, a man does such and such, that he is high of such and such. So he has a different, a less rigorous definition of what an av is, and therefore he includes more. That seems to be how Rashi is learning the whole thing. That our Tana learns only those that clearly say, v'chiyigach ish shoyr, etc. If an ox shall gore the ox of his friend, then he will pay such and such. Damage is stated. What the damager is, who the damaged is, how much the damage will be, what the act of damage is. That seems to be what Rashi calls behedya. The shomrim, it doesn't say so much behedya. If a man takes, what's the damage of a shomer? A shomer is not a, not a, is not causing damage, what's the nezek ba'ashomer? His mission to take care of it. But that doesn't say anywhere, clearly, that if should a man take in something in trust and be careless in doing so or not exercise sufficient care, that is considered an act of damage. And it doesn't say it quite like that. The halachas are there, but they have to be reasoned out from the psukim. The subject of those psukim is not the damages. Really, the subject of those psukim is what the responsibilities are, but not the act of damage. And maybe Rashi considers that already not written behedya. And there's a tzar shevet beripu as well, I suppose. It doesn't really say clearly that if a man damages another man, he shall pay. There's a tzar beripu shevet beripu, and this is how you calculate them. It doesn't say that. Whereas in the case of the Mishnah, those are all stated with exactly how to calculate, in detail, how to calculate the damages. Whether it's chatzi nezek or nezek sholem, whether it's migufo or min aliyah, clearly stated in each case. So it's possible that Rashi is saying here that the difference between our Mishnah and Rabbi Yeshaya is that our Mishnah includes those which are behedya, absolutely behedya, whereas Rabbi Yeshaya includes things which are written, but not quite with the same degree of clarity. Shur mechinim chayev b'pshia. The unique halacha of shur mechinim is that he's chayev for pshia, for carelessness. V'ashoyel chayev afilu b'oinsin. And a shoyel, a borrow, is chayev even b'oines. V'soicher v'noisei socher chayovim b'gneiva v'aveda. And the soicher and the noisei socher have the same din. A person who is paying to use it or is paid to look after it have the same responsibilities. They are not chayav for oimsin. They, of course, are chayav for pshia, but not only are they chayav for pshia, they're also chayav for gneva v'aveda. I had an interesting case in Halacha when I was lent a car by a car dealer to try it out, to decide if I wanted to buy one like that. And it was stolen. And it wasn't Pshia. Alarms were on, and immobilizers, whatever instructions I was given to look after it, I was given. I tined it, it was a bit of an unusual case. I tined it on Chayev, and he tined it on Potter. What would be the din? What am I? What is my din? Am I shoyel? Am I shoyel socher? Am I socher? What am I? So he's lending it to me, isn't he?
You're not buying.
I am, because I'm entitled to use it. He said, use it for the weekend. Enjoy it. Use it. No, if he gives him a shush to use it, then he's doesn't he get the din of a shul if he's allowed to use it? I think we're not learning the parish of shomim, but it's interesting to see what the nezikin are. I think a shul is anybody has the right to use it. The question is that here it's in his interest that I have the right to use it. That's the only that was his taina. You don't need it and you don't want it. I want you to use it because I feel if you use it you'll buy one. So you're saying is a shomer chinam, or maybe even a shomer socher? I might have been, in a sense. Was that going far? Shomer socher. It's in his interests that I should use it. Yeah, but it's the other way around. So it's not shomer socher. He's not paying me. A socher is coming closer, and he's getting the benefit.
He's getting some benefit as well. He's both getting benefit.
Right. Probably it would be closer to a socher. I can use it, but it's in his interest that I use it, like Avis. And so what's the din of Gneva Vaveda Bar Socher? So Bar Socher is Chayv Gneva Vaveda, so I'm right there. Sorry?
What is the situation? He can be Mochel.
But that's Gneva Aveda. It's not Bichor, it's not Oinus. What happens if there's an immobilizer and there are all sorts of things? Still Gneva Aveda. Still not, that's not Oinus. That's not Oinus. And Oinus. or this is something completely beyond your control. You're held up. A robbery would probably be an oinis. This you say, if I was standing outside all day and I never left it, it wouldn't have been stolen. Good, so it's never vaveda. It's not pshia. It's not pshia, it's never vaveda. That means in the normal course of using it in a responsible way, it got stolen. That's probably a din of a soicha. Yes, the Gemara comes on to that difference. The Gemara comes on to that difference. Yes. The Gemara deals with that. What is interesting here is in the case, for example, of Gneva Vaveda, what is the Nezek? In what way am I Mazik with Gneva Vaveda? In what way is the Shomer the Mazik? Babshia, good, is a Mazik. So you'll say that the Chiddush with a Shomer Sofer or a Soicher is that he has to take measures even against Gneva Vaveda. And if he hasn't looked after it properly. Otherwise he's not a mazik, is he? Where's the soicher the mazik? If it's as pshir, good, I understand. And this will say it's all pshir. But it's talking about pshir and all of it.
From the point of view of the nizak, he is a
nizak,
irrespective of
who took the but that's then between him and the ganav. The fact is, I'm chayiv, so I'm the one he has dealings with, not with the ganav. That means if that's called a nezek, then I'm the mazik. How can I'm the mazik? It must be because if the Torah is mechayiv me, that means in the Torah's opinion, I didn't take enough measure of looking after it. It must be with me.
But it could be also be in the Torah's opinion that irrespective of the fact that you don't harm him directly, nevertheless, you're
responsible. Could be. So then what is the nezik? Then we've got to understand what Rabbi Yoshaya means when he regards these all as nezikin. Let's go further. Sorry? That's only if he claims it was stolen from him and it's found that it wasn't. He claims it was stolen from him and it is found on him. If he claims it's first stolen, he's got to take shuas that it was stolen, correct. But if it's then found on him, that's when he's in difficulty. But that's not the only case we're talking about, the chura. The chuluk sibi and all these cases are written, kidatani perek ashul bebov metziah. And all these are written as we learn in the Braise in Perek Hashul in Bava Metziah. So you see already from that that Rashi has to bring a raya from Bava Metziah that they're written. It doesn't say Bechulik Sivi Kidichtiv and quote the Parshas. He brings a raya from the Gemara that they're written. Parsha Rishonim Emra B'Shem Echinim. The Gemara says the Parsha Rishonim means Shem Echinim, Shniya B'Shem Esocher, Shlishis B'Shoel Hilkach Oves Ninu, and that's why they are Oves. Because the Gemara works out, they're also written. It's not Behedya and Achanami, but that's why Rabbi Yoshaya includes it as Ovis, and our Mishnah doesn't. Will a common boy my Nina told this? What about Tildis? The Gemara is going to discuss that. What are the Tildis? Nezek, what is Nezek? Achuvu b'chaveru nesilu mashu shove akshav pochus mibetchila. Nezek is that if a person hurts his friend, he's got to pay him the difference in his value before and after the wound. Tsar oimdim kama odom ha'imed yodo likotzitz al yedei cherev roitzalitin kadeshi iskatzitz lo al yedei sam delesleit tsar kulihai. One has to evaluate how much a person would be willing to pay instead of having his arm chopped off with a sword to have it removed medically in a way that wouldn't cause him such tsar. Notice Rashi says tsar kuli hai. There is no way that you can evaluate the absence of tsar. How much would a person pay not to have the tsar? The only way you cannot have the tsar is to have your arm not removed. But if your arm is going to be removed, there is tsar involved. The only question is one can try and approximate it by minimizing the tsar as far as possible and figuring out how much a person would be willing to pay for that. So that would be the question. How much would you be willing to pay to have it done by anesthetics? You mean there's much less tsar? Yeah, but if you visit somebody a couple of days after the anesthetic's worn off, you realize that there's nothing like it would have been, but that's why it's kuli hai. Tsar there always is. You can't wound a person and free him of tsar totally. It's not possible. You can only increase or decrease the tsar. I have another theory which doesn't really have much to do with this Gemara, but the words in Rashi are interested, is that nobody in a living state is free of tzar. It is not possible to be free of tzar at any stage of one's life. And that it's really just a question of what degree of a hypochondriac one is. The fact is, there are times when every little thing is a pain. Things which normally one doesn't feel. If you're down, things which normally you don't feel become painful. So if one's healthy, it just means you're not, you know, your mind is not on the pain. You're busy with other things, you don't feel the pain. But it's not that you're free of pain. If you would stop and really become hypochondriacal and remove everything else from your mind and concentrate on your little toe, you'll feel pain in your little toe. You'll feel it throbbing at first. You'll feel that the body's working and functioning when one is alive. There's pain. Veripui v'sheves u'voishes. It's the same, by the way, as excuses for not learning Torah. The excuses everybody's got. The same. There's no difference between that. Everybody's got reason not to learn. The only question is how we cope with those reasons. No. Nobody has no reasons not to learn. It would be a total battler, and his reason not to learn would be that he's a battler. But anybody who's not a battler has good reason to have no time for learning. Which is just how he handles it. I was listening to a wonderful tape of Reb Elias in the car today, and he was talking about the schus that a woman has in waiting for a husband. So he says, he's not talking about husbands in Kolo. So that's easy. He's talking about people who need for to go out and earn a living. And the whole day they're out earning a living, and she's busy making sure that the children go to school, and they come back from school, and they finish lunch quickly so they can go to cheder and learn more Torah, and the whole day is revolving around Torah. Finally he finishes work and he goes off to learn. And he just says in passing there, and certainly he's not going to come back in less than 4 hours. Doesn't, you know, a person who works all day after work goes to learn, he's not going to come home in less than 4 hours. What kind of learning is that? Just in passing, that wasn't a word. That wasn't Bussi. He was talking to Yeshiva Bukhim. It was just his comment in passing. It didn't enter his mind that a working person would come home in less than 4 hours after going to learn. Comes home at 6. He finishes work at 6. So he'll go home at 10. That's where the woman has this. She sits and waits till 10 for him. Goes instead of coming home at 6. I say we're doing our women out of a lot of schus, because before we used to have the shir at this time, everybody used to get home at 7. People used to get home from work at 7. If you remember, those of you who were here at the time when I started the shir at this time, everybody said, how are we going to manage it? But we're all at work. So it wasn't that we took this time away from the ladies, we took this time away from work. So the Ola Parnosa gets extra schus, maybe. The employers and the Olis, they get extra schus. But the wives don't see us any later. They see us the same time as other people see their wives. Most people who are working hard and doing well get home at 7. And what time at that Edward Nathan do they get home there? So you figure out, you'll be working at Edward Nathan. You'll get home after a shear at 7:15, and your colleagues get home at 9. And your wife's going to come in a hub, and she's going to say, I want my schus. I say, what's schus? Everybody else in that place used to see the husbands at 9. Your husband was a ben Tera. You saw him at 7:15. What schus do you want? What's the solution? To learn longer. Yeah, that's what we do them out of it. Yeah, come for an hour's learning, the because you. Good. And it's the hardest time, but you wouldn't be there in any case. The wives are fooling themselves if they think you would be there.
More success in getting us to be there.
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. Not if you're busy and you've got a customer and that program has to be ready for tomorrow morning. So what's the urgency to get home? This way, there's an urgency of a shir. And there's a certain pressure, there's a certain social pressure, the chavrusas, you fall behind, the shir isn't nice, you get a bad look from me. Look, there's a little bit of pressure. But you're sitting there in front of your computer, and it's now 6 o'clock. Another 15 minutes, and I'll be, what's the urgency? The children are home, bathing. Your wife will manage. You'll be home at 6:30. Next time you look at your watch, it's 7:15. We're fooling ourselves, and they're fooling themselves if they think that if we weren't at the base of Midrash, that we would be at home. Where do you find such people? What kind of successful people in our kind of operations are at home at 5:45, or at 6 o'clock, or very often at 6:30. It's not done. Hard-working people don't do it. Not in this country. Not in any country. Sit here from 6 till 10 o'clock. 4 hours of learning, good gesunte learning, every night. Come home feeling on top of the world with 4 hours of solid learning behind. Come home for supper. That's it. And then he says, and then she waits up for him to give him his supper. That's where she has this chas. To wait up till 7 o'clock, what's a mesiras nefesh? To wait for supper till 7 o'clock, that's supper time. We get home for supper time. Where's the mesiras nefesh? For her to wait till 10 o'clock for supper, that's mesiras nefesh. Because what he says the Gemara is asking in Noshim B'Maika Zachion is what is their oil Torah? Not why do they have sukkah? They do many mitzvahs. He says, what's the kash of the Gemara? They do more mitzvahs than the men. What all day they do chesed and mitzvahs. What's the kash of the Gemara? Noshim B'Maika Zachion. That's not the shayla. They want to know how can they can have the effect of learning, not the mitzvah of learning. Mitzvah of learning is it, but the effect that purification, that exhilaration, that elevation that comes only from commitment to Torah. How are they going to get that? That they can get from their own mesiras nefesh, in making sure that their lives revolve around Torah. How does their lives revolve around Torah? That everything is working, is geared, the home is geared to making sure that father and children can learn as much Torah as possible. Then there's zeicha as well. Amazing, we go along thinking that we've got it all. It isn't quite like that. Again, Rashi says that all these cases of Nezik are learned from Psukim in Perek HaChovel. So again, it's learned from Psukim in Perek HaChovel. That means it's not clear in the Chumash. Rashi has to bring a Raya from Gemara. The Kiv and Diksivi, and since they're written, obviously, you know, they're obvious. Again, Rashi says. So the definition of obvious, according to Rabbi Yoshaya, is Ksivi. If there's a makor for it in the Torah, then it's an av. Well, that's questionable. You see, Rashi at this stage has said, no, that's not what an av is. An av is not a primary category that lends to other categories of ovis. An av is a damage mentioned in the Torah which leads to toldos. No, they're not toldos. They're obvious because they're mentioned in the Torah. A toldo is something that is learned from an av. These aren't learned from an av. This is learned from the Torah. That's right. No, they're not. They each have their own parsha. Each one has their own parsha with their own halachas. Each one is unique. It's a different Rashi, is not learning like that. So the Mi'iri obviously has a different definition than Av and Tolda. That's not how Rashi is learning. In all these cases of Rabbi Yeshaya, he himself is the Mazik. These four shomrim also, they are the mazikin. Don't make the mistake in thinking that the ganav is the mazik. He is the mazik. The shomer is the mazik. Since they didn't look after it correctly. Here we see clearly Rashi holds that if a soicher has it stolen from him, he hasn't looked after it correctly. That's the responsibility of being a soicher. If that means you've got to stand next to it all the time with your gun in your hand, then that's what you have to do. And if you're not prepared to do that, then you shouldn't hire something, or you shouldn't take a fee for using something. But oynes, in the case of oynes, yeah. Sure, in the case of oynes, would not be a mazik. Well, we don't know in what case of shoyl really Rashi is referring to.
But he must be talking about, when he talks about shoyl,
could be pshia. It's going to be the shul in his uniqueness, and the only case where he's unique is in the case of oynes, and even there he's considered a mazik. That means that even in a shul, hoyel v'loy shomru kuroi, even if it's an oynes, that's called, he hasn't looked after the keroi. How could he have done any better? It's beyond his control. So we don't know. That's a good question. When zokin the azik gufo loy kamayri masnisin, and in those nezikin, the azik gufo. What's the case of azik gufo? All these cases, loy kamayri masnisin. Our Mishnah isn't talking. Why does Rashi say that? Mashma, that were it not for that distinction, then our Mishnah could have listed it.
Because they are
behedya. But here we've just said that Rashi holds these are not behedya. So Mimonoshev, if these are not behedya, then Rashi doesn't have to say our Mishnah doesn't deal with these. So it seems to be an interesting thing that there are two things happening here. The one is that the only Nezikin written in the Torah behedya on these Kemomim. Niske Odom are not written behedya. Is that right? What's the difference with Rav? Oh, so the only difference we're going to have further on is that a general category for Odom Hamazik might be written behedya. But these specific cases are not written behedya. That's what we seem to have so far. That the only things which are written behedya are momo and amazi.
Is gufo the subject of the azik?
Yes, the azik gufo, not the nizak gufo. The azik gufo. Says the Gemara, v'tana didan my time tani hani. Why then, asked the Gemara, does our Mishnah not include these? So according to Rashi, we'll have to learn this. It's all very well saying that those four are written behedya and these aren't, but these are also written beposuk. Why does the Altana make the distinction between those that are written behedya and those that aren't written behedya? That's what the Gemara is asking. Not why does the Tana include those and not these. Those are behedya and these aren't. But why did Altana choose to make the dividing line there? Clearly Altana also holds that these are obvious. But they're not obvious listed in the Mishnah. So they're a different level of obvious. Those are behedya, these aren't behedya. Why has Altana chosen to draw that distinction there? Bishlomo l'Shmuel, and it's all very well according to Shmuel, I can understand it. Benizke momen komairi, benizke gufuloi komairi. The distinction is not just that this is written behedya and this isn't written behedya. There's a whole conceptual distinction. That those that are written behedya are all nizke momen. And these are not niske momin. But according to Rav, who holds that Mave is Odom Hamazik, and that our Mishnah does not have a conceptual boundary line, our Mishnah includes Odom Hamazik as well. Why doesn't it include these? Answer the Gemara, Tana Odom v'chol mili de Odom. They are included by Odom. So our Mishnah, the Gemara says, is not going into the details, is not breaking down each Av, but it includes Odom as a general category. Shor is a general category. Odom is a general category. Boer and Esh are general categories, and that covers the whole area. According to Rav, that's the whole area of Nezikin. Why? No, now we can say Odom Hamazik in general is in the Pasuk Behedya, as Rashi brings further down. No, but right through the Gemara isn't answering that way. That's why I modified the question in saying, according to Rashi, what the Gemara is asking is, why does the Mishnah choose to draw that boundary line here, Behedya, not Behedya? Why doesn't it also go like Rav Hoshaya and say all those that are written, even if it's not Behedya? It's true that these are behedya and these aren't, but the Gemara is asking more. Why make that the boundary line? Says the Gemara, because there's a conceptual difference too. Those that are written behedya are momen hamazik. Odom hamazik is not behed, is not behedya. So the difference is not just behedya, not behedya. The difference is odom or momen, according to Shmuel. And according to Rav, we'll have to say that even odom hamazik is written behedya as a general category. But not as the specifics aren't behedya. So as a general category, it's included. And therefore, we only take those of behedya. According to that, now we can't say that. You're right. On this, we can't say that. We must say that according to Shmuel, according to Rav, these are heads of categories. Where the Gemara is holding now is that these are heads of categories. And the heads of categories are written behedya. There are other things which are not told us. They're also obvious. Why are they obvious? Because they're written bikro. But they're not written behedya. They're rather seen as subcategories of these. But they're not learned out of these. They learn directly out of the Chumash, but they're not written behedya. Why does the Torah not write them behedya? Because the Torah wants us to see them as subcategories. Maybe. Ask the Gemara, Rabbi Yeshaya, Nami Hotani Le Odom. So why is Rabbi Yeshaya not happy with that? Let's treat them as four heads of categories. If you treat them as heads of categories, then Odom is included. Why go in detail all the cases of Odom? Answer the Gemara, Trey Gavni Odom Tana. Trey Gavni Odom. There are two types of Odom Amazik. Tana Odom Dazik Odom, but Tana Odom Dazik Shur. This is not a head of category. Because Rabbi Yeshaya's cases are Odom is Mazik Momen. What the Mishnah is talking about, Mave is Odom is Mazik Odom. And those are two different categories altogether. You can't leave them out. You can't say this is a subcategory of that. Ihoki shur nami litni trei gavni shur. Then let's say the same about shur. Litni shur dazi shur, litni shur dazi godo. Then Rav Yeshaya should reclassify shvorim as well and start a whole new section, subsection of shur. Says the Gemara, hi my bish, lomo odom dazi shur nezik udum shalom. In the case of Odom, the Mazik is sure he pays Nezik. Odom, the Ozik, Odom is Shalim Arba Dvorim, but if a man damages a man, he pays Arba Dvorim extra, not only Nezik, but another four. El Asher, Mali Shor, Dazik Shor, Mali Shor, Dazik Odom. Idi vi idi Nezik udu Mishalim. No matter who the Shor damages, he pays for the damage. So there is no halachic difference. Now we're having an added factor. So what have we got now? What makes them obvious? Written in the Pasuk makes them obvious. Written in the Pasuk Behedya makes them, or maybe not, maybe according to Rashi, that Gufa is a Machlokes. It's Mashmah from Rashi on the Mishnah that our Mishnah holds that if it's not written Behedya, it's not an Av, isn't it? So what is it? Tolda. The son of our Mishnah would hold that it's a Tolda. What difference would it make if it's an Ava or Tolda? There'd be no Nafkimina. Is there Nafkimina? Is there Nafkimina in Halacha between an Ava and a Tolda? There's no Nafkimina. So that's what Rashi says. The Nafkimina is just one is from the Torah and one isn't. It's just a question of where they come from. So Lichoy, it would seem according to Rashi, if we look clearly at what Rashi says, that according to our Mishnah, there are only four of us. Everything else are told us. According to Rav Yeshaya, he defines Ovis wider. Anything even learnt out from the Torah is an Av. Asks the Gemara, but why make that distinction? Again, why does our Mishnah make that distinction? Why doesn't our Mishnah hold like Rav Yeshaya, that anything learnt out from the Torah is an Av? That makes good sense. Answers the Gemara, no. And we said, Bishlamo, according to Shmuel, I could say there's a natural distinction. Ovis Nezikin are Odom HaMazik. Ovis Nezikin are Momen HaMazik. And there is still Odom HaMazik, which is not part of these Ovis. That's how we would have to learn it. That's just our Mishnah deals with Momen HaMazik, and these are the four. And then there's Odom HaMazik, which is a different section. But what about according to Shmuel? What about according to Rav? The Mishnah includes Odom HaMazik. So according to Rav, we have to say that these four are the only four. and they're heads of categories. Ask the Gemara, what did Rav Yishai do with that? That's a good point. Mave includes all the mamazik. There you've got, these are heads of categories. Why go further and include them as ovis? Why not treat them as tildes? Answers the Gemara, because there's a difference. These are really two different categories. Odom HaMazik Odom and Odom HaMazik Shor are two different categories. What about Shor HaMazik Shor and Shor HaMazik Odom? Answers the Gemara, in Halacha there are no differences. So now we've got what the Ovis are written in the Torah, not necessarily Behedya. Why not? Because included in those that are written in the Torah is a subcategory of Odom. The reason it's written in the Torah, even though it's not written Behedya, is because it's different. And therefore it's also enough. So now we have a very strange, if you look at the sort of geometrical structure, it becomes very interesting. You've got, according to Rav, four Ovis, which include all Nezikim, including Odom. But Odom HaMazik has a subcategory of Odom HaMazik Shor. Odom HaMazik Momon, a man damaging somebody else's property. That's a subsection, which is also given the status of an Av because its halachas differ. They're both two Ovis. That's an Av? No, Mave, if we're going to include Mave. No, why is Mave Odom HaMazik Shor? All the Shomrim are Odom HaMazik Shor. All these cases, the Shomrim and all that, the Odom HaMazik Shor. No, why? I don't know further on, but at this point it would seem clear that the Gemara is learning, because the Gemara is asking the Chiluk, why does Rabbi Yoshai have to bring all these others when you've got Mave? And the Mishnah answers the Gemara, there's a difference between Odom HaMazik Shor and Odom HaMazik Odom. Now what is Shomrim and what are these cases here? Shomrim would be Odom HaMazik Shor. Okay. And then Nezik Tzar and Ripui is Odom HaMazik Odom. So then we would say that the Mishnah is Odom HaMazik Momon, which is the Av. And there's a subcategory to that which is also given the status of an Av, which is Odom HaMazik Odom. Right, which we'll come to. Odom HaMazik Odom, which is also written in the Torah, but not Beferush, not Behedya. Why not Behedya? Because it really is a bit of a subcategory. So then we'll come out that there are certain Ovis that the Torah writes Behedya, and those include the major categories of all the Ovis. There is a second category which the Torah writes, but not Behedya. It's an Av, but not a primary Av. And then there are the Toldos, which aren't written at all. So it comes out, according to this, that the Torah actually structures it for us. Four Behedya, one section, broken up into various parts, one section written, but not Behedya, plus Toldos, which aren't written at all. Sorry? Yeah, then the whole thing would fall to pieces. Yeah, we've got to say it's a Davka, yeah. That's not so difficult for me, because the Rashi and the Rif, even according to those old, it's the same, but it is Rashi, it wasn't earlier. That means Rashi chose to put in the word Behedya later. We have the final, the Rashi wrote it three times. And what we have is the final one. Which means Rashi chose to put in the word Behedya afterwards. If anything, it's Adarav. The diuk is even stronger. But it's forming a structure. That's what I'm trying to get to, is where it's forming a bit of a bit of a pyramid pattern. Otherwise, the thing is chaotic. It's random. We'll have to see whether we can stick with it right through. We have to see as we go. But at least to form some kind of structure, that we need to do at the moment.
Litni Hani.
But according to Rav, who holds that Mave is Odom, if it's so dealing with Odom already, let's go further. Tana Odom, Mave de Masnisin, Tana Odom da Azikshur Kloima. Niz came Momin, Doho Mave, Dum Yedaboy Ktani. The Mishnah that he has, Rashi says, Mefurush, as Eric was learning, that Niz came Momin is Mave is Dum Yedaboy. Uboy Loimairi Benizke Odom. And we're not talking in the case of Boy where the Boy damaged people, only where the Boy damaged property. Terachmona patri legamri kitanya lekamen, the Torah patters it if it damages a person. Shor v'loy odom chamo v'loy kelim. V'odom the azik shor heiche ksiv the karile av. And where is odom the azik shor? Where is it written? Dichtiv v'makya nefesh behema yishalmena. That's why it's an av. What kind of av? Is this a primary av or a secondary av? Is that behedya or not behedya? That's absolutely behedya. Makhe, nefesh, behema, yishalmena. There can't be more behedya than that. So odom amazik momen, odom amazik shor, is written behedya, and therefore it's primary av. Odom amazik odom is secondary av. And those are the other cases that Rabbi Yeshaya brings in. I need to leave it there. And tomorrow night I'm probably going to be out of town. To give a shiur, so it's up to you. He asked me also, he's terribly keen to give shiurim here. But the question is whether you need the time rather to learn on your own or you want to shiur. That's it. Rabbi Rabinovich. Rabbi Rabinovich. I don't know if he's holding on. But firstly, I don't know if he's holding on the sugi. Secondly, if he is holding on the sugi, who knows what tack he'll take. We're not ready yet to hear shiurim on the sugi. It can confuse at this stage. I think it shouldn't be on this. It shouldn't be on the sugi. If he does give a shiur, it should be on something else. The question is, do you need the time? So, who would rather hear the shiur? Who would rather learn on their own? Those who would rather hear the shiur would prefer rather than learn on your own. Those who would rather learn on your own. It's not just abstention. So I think that if he gets hold of you, I think we just have to say that Poshel, we need the time to learn. If he wants to come down on Shabbos again, only with pleasure.